A Christmas Carol in prose.
Being a Ghost Story of Christmas by Charles Dickens.
The last of the spirits. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the air through which this spirit moved it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. He knew no more, for the spirit neither spoke nor moved. I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come? Ghost of the future? I fear you more than any specter I have seen, but as I know your presence is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company, and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? It gave him no reply. The hand was pointed straight before them. Lead on, lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on, spirit. They scarcely seemed to enter the city, for the city rather seemed to spring about them. But there they were, in the heart of it, on change, among the merchants. The spirit stopped beside one little knot of businessmen. Observing that the hand was pointed to them, Scrooge advanced to listen to their talk. No, said the great fat man with a monstrous chin. I don't know much about it either way. Only know he's dead. Well, when did he die? Inquired another. Last night, I believe. Well, what was the matter with him? I thought he'd never die. God knows, said the first with a yawn. What has he done with his money? Asked a red-faced gentleman. I haven't heard, said the man with the large chin. Company, perhaps. Hadn't left it to me, that's all I know. Bye-bye. Scrooge was at first inclined to be surprised that the spirit should attach importance to conversation apparently so trivial. But feeling assured that it must have some hidden purpose, he set himself to consider what it was likely to be. It could scarcely be supposed to have any bearing on the death of Jacob, his old partner, for that was past, and this ghost's province was the future. He looked about that very place for his own image, but another man stood in his accustomed corner. And though the clock pointed to his usual time of day of being there, he saw no likeness of himself among the multitudes that poured in through the porch. It gave him little surprise, however, for he had been revolving in his mind a change of life, and he thought and hoped. He saw his newborn resolutions carried out in this. They left this busy scene and went into an obscure part of the town, to a low shop where iron, old rags, bottles, bones, and greasy offal were bought. A gray-haired rascal of great age sat smoking his pipe. Scrooge and the phantom came into the presence of this man, just as a woman with a heavy bundle slunk into the shop. But she had scarcely entered when another woman, similarly laden, came in too, and she was closely followed by a man in faded black. After a short period of blank astonishment, in which the old man with the pipe had joined them, they all burst into a laugh. "Let the charwoman alone to be first," cried she who had entered first. "Let the laundress alone to be second, and let the undertaker's man alone to be third. Look here, old Joe, here's a chance. If we hadn't all three met here without meaning it." "You couldn't have met in a better place. You were made free of it long ago, you know, and the other two ain't strangers. What have you got to sell? And what have you got to sell? Half a minute's patience, Joe, and you shall see." "What odds, then? What odds, Miss Dilber?" said the woman. "Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did. Who's the worse for the loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose." Miss Dilber, whose manner was remarkable for general appropriation, said, "No, indeed, ma'am. If he wanted to keep him after he was dead, a wicked old screw, why wasn't he natural in his lifetime? If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death, instead of lying, gasping out there alone by himself. It's the truest word that ever was spoken. It's a judgment on him. I wish it was a little heavier judgment, and it should have been. You may depend upon it. If I could have laid my hands on anything else... Open that bundle, old Joe, and let me know the value of it. Speak out plain. I'm not afraid to be the first, nor afraid for them to see it. Joe went down on his knees for the greater convenience of opening the bundle, and dragged out a large and heavy roll of some dark stuff. What do you call this? Bed curtains? Ah, bed curtains. Don't drop that oil on those blankets now. His blankets? Whose else do you think? He isn't likely to take cold without them, I dare say. Ah, you may look through that shirt till your eyes ache, but you won't find a hole in it, nor a threadbare place. It's the best he had, and a fine one, too. They'd have wasted it by dressing him up in it if it hadn't been for me. Scrooge listened to this dialogue in horror. Spirit, I see. I see. The case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends that way now. Merciful heaven, what is this? The scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bare, uncurtained bed. A pale light rising in the outer air fell straight upon this bed, and on it, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of this plundered, unknown man. Spirit, let me see some tenderness connected with a death, or this dark chamber, spirit, will be forever present to me.
The ghost conducted him to poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire. Quiet, very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in needlework, but surely they were very quiet. And he took a child and set him in the midst of them. Where had Scrooge heard those words? He had not dreamed them. The boy must have read them out as he and the spirit crossed the threshold. Why did he not go on? The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face. The color hurts my eyes, she said. The color? Ah, poor Tiny Tim. They're better now again. It makes them weak by candlelight, and I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time. Past it, rather, Peter answered, shutting up his book. But I think he has walked a little slower than he used these few last evenings, mother. I have known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed. And so have I, cried Peter. Often. And so have I, exclaimed another. So had all. But he was very light to carry, and his father loved him so that it was no trouble, no trouble. And there is your father at the door. She hurried out to meet him, and little Bob in his comforter, he had need of it, poor fellow, came in. His tea was ready for him on the hob, and they all tried who should help him to it most. Then the two young Cratchits got upon his knees and laid, each child, a little cheek against his face, as if they said, "Don't mind it, father. Don't be grieved." Bob was very cheerful with them and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the work upon the table and praised the industry and speed of Mrs. Cratchit and the girls. They would be done long before Sunday, he said. Sunday? You went today then, Robert? Yes, my dear, returned Bob. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. My little child. He broke down all at once. He couldn't help it. If he could have helped it, he and his child would have been farther apart, perhaps, than they were. Spectre, said Scrooge. Something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me what man that was, with the covered face, whom we saw lying dead. the ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him to a dismal, wretched churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they shadows of the things that may be only? Still the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood. Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which, if persevered in, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me. The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge. Am I that man who lay upon the bed? No, spirit! Oh, no, no! Spirit, hear me! I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this, if I am past all hope? Assure me that I yet may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. For the first time, the kind hand faltered. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on the stone. Holding up his hands in one last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.
Ding dong, merrily on high, in heaven the bells are ringing. Ding dong, merrily the sky.
Our dramatic reading of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol is part of the Holy Heresy podcast series and stems from the conversations that begin in our live services on Sunday mornings. Each week we explore the growing edges of theological thought, the exploration of the links between science and religion, the challenges of spiritual practice in 21st century Los Angeles, and most of all, the joys of sharing community in the creative capital of the world. If you enjoy the Holy Heresy podcast series and would like to support these continuing conversations, visit fccla.org/give and follow the prompts. Donations are tax deductible, and all gifts support the social outreach, faith-based exploration, and commitment to the arts that is First Church. This podcast is produced and directed by David Harris and Laura Bell Fragan. A Christmas Carol executive producers include David Harris, Julie Giannata, and Scott Cimbala, with Julie Giannata director, recorded at Massive Music Studios with Patrick Arthur audio mixing. God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen is played by Christoph Bull on the great organs, and Ding Dong Merrily on High by Charles Wood, sung by Laude, directed by David Harris. Voice actors for A Christmas Carol in presentation order include Chapter 1, Sammy Smith, Sharon Lawrence, and Michael Zimanek. Chapter 2, Melanie Edmonds. Chapter 3, Lillian Mottern, Jacqueline Mottern, James Mottern, Carlina Mottern, and Petraine Keane. Chapter 4, David Harris and Christoph Bull. Chapter 5, Clara Martin and Bennett Martin. Thank you for your presence here today, where all are welcome.